I'm in a shade. But every time I do, my family thinks I'm crazy. The hollow earth, UFOs, aliens, and painting. Throw it in the water, they swear the sky's daily. When I talk about these things, they think I'm crazy. There's no escaping anymore, they all that I'm facing. I'm going 90, mind control, they're sacrificing babies. The end of days, but anyways, my family thinks I'm crazy.
And they want to have their crimes covered up, you know, and have all, like the secret societies are a natural flowering of psychopathy. You know what I mean? They want to work together with each other to prey on the others. You know what I mean? Like, the military has always been satanic. All the symbols are cult, you know, like the purple heart that's got like the maiden goddess. And it's got like a trapezoid, and it's got like, it's got all kinds of evil shit. But it's like, other people don't know. Normal people don't know. The longtime generational Satanists know exactly what it is. And that's why they put the star upside down. You know, like the one that Forrest Gump got, it's got an upside down 5-pointed star.
You just heard today's guest, researcher and host of the Wake the Dead podcast, who joins me, Mystic Mark, here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy this conversation with Sean McCann. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. And joining me again on the show is a friend of the show. He is the host of the Wake the Dead podcast. His name is Sean McCann. Sean, welcome back. Last time you were on the show, we talked a lot about Kubrick. And I wanted to have you back on the show to talk more about that. So let's get into it. Thanks again for joining me, Sean McCann.
Okay. I talked about Kubrick because I talk about Kubrick, man. I've seen Kubrick, he is, Stanley has imprinted my brain with his images. I'm a photographer. I love photography. And so I've soaked myself in Stanley's artwork, and now, like a sponge, I've absorbed it all, and like I'm still absorbing. Like just before we started recording, I told you about how in Eyes Wide Shut, the group of thugs on the street that are the homophobes that are all over him, messing with him, saying "Merry Christmas, Mary," like yeah, pushing him. They were all wearing Yale sweatshirts, and I didn't notice that until now. And I'm like, oh yeah, a bunch of Yaleys. And what do? They go to their dungeon and, you know, jerk off with, you know, pee on each other and whatever the hell, Skull and Bones at least. And so and it's just like another hint that like, those are the youth that grow up to be the ones that wear the robes. You know what I mean? It's kind of just like another little glimpse at. So anyway, yeah, that stuff just bubbles out. Because I'm so soaked in it. And like, I've been, and I research all of the little angles of everything.
Well, let me ask you this, because I did want to have you back on for a more general conversation, because I know we focused on Kubrick last time. But beyond Kubrick's body of work, are there any other pieces of media you've enjoyed or looked into that seem to portray aspects of MKUltra? Because obviously Clockwork Orange is sort of a very blatant example of this in Kubrick's work, but Eyes Wide Shut conceivably as well, and other hints here and there, potentially The Shining, and even 2001 Space Odyssey being kind of like the magnum opus of this whole MKUltra program, in the sense that he's kind of showing you what, let's say, the controllers want the world religion to sort of look like. This
Right. Evolution,
sci-fi, you know, scientific materialism, survival of the fittest sort of aspects, these things that are portrayed you know, from beginning to end of 2001 Space Odyssey, again, obviously ending with AI HAL sort of.
Right. But really, the religion that it was like atheism and Satanism.
Right.
And like, really, at the end, the baby of the, you know, that represents humanity was cast out of the garden, you know, like the bone was cast out of this, you know, the idea of the Christian, you know, Garden of Eden, which is the earth, this beautiful place. But like our intellect locked us out of heaven, you know what I mean? Like now we're in the cold depths of space. But the Satanists think that's great. They've separated from, you know, and that's what all like the Klepoth magic of the, you know, the evil Kabbalists and stuff, they're trying to separate from the oneness and be, you know, their own God in this hellish
trap.
Well,
and this kind of goes back to the original idea of what Satan is, right? It's this fallen angel, this idea that the free will given to human beings should be given to this angelic being that is this devil and Satan, Lucifer, whatever you would like to call them. It seems they're all sort of the same story told different ways or different aspects of the same story. But the idea, yeah, is that, you know, Satanism sort of gives birth to atheism and other sort of bastardizations, right? And this is kind of, yeah, again, what is ironic about this whole genre of sci-fi in general is it is very satanic, this idea that the earth is going to be destroyed and we're going to become like pure intellectual beings, you know, mind fuel, you know, our mind is our ultimate tool and we are out in the vast, yeah, hellscape that is space, right? So yeah, it is interesting. That is kind of, I don't know, obviously Kubrick, if we are going to interpret him,
he was an atheist.
Yeah. As a yeah, but like the larger body of work, it doesn't seem like he was necessarily on the side of the controllers. But then,
oh, I agree.
Is the irony of this whole thing is he's portraying 2001 Space Odyssey, this, you know, almost you know, again, this magnum opus of right. Satanism, right? So what do you think this is a sort of like him? And I know we don't need to get dragged back into Kubrick because I did ask you a question that took us away from Kubrick.
No, I know. Like, I was going to talk about Terry Gilliam there for a second, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'll make note of that and you can respond to what I just said because it's worth stewing on. I mean, I think these ideas are still very potent and have an effect right. on the media we see today. Popular media is certainly inspired by some of these, you know, breakthroughs right. that Kubrick took.
Well, so I think that like a lot of art, really good art, can be viewed in like many ways. And I think that it's like a triumph for the Satanists, but it's also like a lament of the Christians, of like, you know, but it's, you know what I mean? Like he doesn't have to agree with it to display it. And it's like, he was charged to make this thing. And, you know, I don't know, like he probably knew that 2001 was the year that they were going to take over, you know, he might not have known it was going to be exploding buildings or what, you know, but, I think that, like they were setting up the whole idea of the new millennium being theirs. And so it's almost like he's displaying the horror to everyone. Like, be aware, hey, this technology is a trap from Satan, you know?
Right.
But at the same time, it's like, ooh, so cool. Look, you know, space, ooh. You know? So people that, you know, many people can view it and find value in the same piece of artwork, you know. Kubrick is a master of that.
Yeah.
As far as like MK Ultra in other pieces of art, dude, it's everywhere. Oh my God. Fuck, Disney movies. Like, I mean, there was a TV show where like the guy from Oh man, I'm totally blank now. The guy from Dawson's Creek was in it, and like there was what the hell? Starts with an F, maybe. Fringe. You remember that? Like,
yeah.
Dude, they like get in a chair and they do like. It's like every episode is like the government is doing secret experiments on the right. on like the population, you know. And,
Fringe definitely felt like a little bit of another
revelation
on X-Files sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
No, yeah, very X-Files. But yeah, I'm familiar with Fringe. I feel like, yeah, that your response to my question kind of leads me to realize my question might be a little nonsensical, because as I think about it, yeah, media in general is designed to be a part of this MK Ultra program. Like, we
right.
can't separate the two. Like, we have the world of entertainment the way it is because of these MK Ultra programs sort of creating the structure for what would become American media. Right. So yeah, to operate within that realm to a certain extent is to have this sort of mindset that, you know, you are creating something for the people. But I feel like a lot of directors, maybe Kubrick, again, we don't need to examine him over again.
It's all good.
But yeah, I feel like there's a certain level of like celebrity, undue celebrity that goes into directors, like almost like they're in like a secret society or something. You know what I mean? Like they have these sort of like unwritten rules and this sort of like mysterious nature to them. You know, they're obviously not front and center in anything typically, unless you're like Quentin Tarantino and you're like putting yourself in the movie. But for the most part, they kind of, yeah, they have like the same sort of thing when we talk about the 60s era of music. Like it seems like they have like family connections and you don't just become a director out of nowhere, right? Like it's prestigious. I guess that's what I'm trying to round out to say. It's like, it's not, you don't just become a director. It feels like something that, at least to be a renowned director, you need to have these sort of connections that it seems like ended up killing Kubrick, right? So you brought up Terry Gilliam, and he's famous for Monty Python, Jabberwocky, which kind of follows that same sort of fantasy.
Time Bandits.
Yeah, and then it goes darker, right? And Brazil was
Brazil. Yeah, dude.
Right? And then 12 Monkeys.
Mind Control.
Another dark one.
Right.
Here in Loathing in Las Vegas, I think that might be one of the first like mainstream depictions of adrenochrome. Word we're not supposed to say.
Huh.
And not much after that of note.
Man. Zero Theorem. You got to watch Zero Theorem.
Yeah, none of these stand out to me. And maybe so I'm good. Just.
You got to see it, though. It's like.
I'm uncultured when it comes to media. Like I have a very strange media diet when it comes to podcasts. I think I probably have pushed out all of what I remember from my days of watching movies and television with all the things I've been listening to through podcasting. So in a way I've tried to like,
that's good. Yeah, just let the hold on to the good ones. You know, you remembered Brazil, so that's good. At least you had
that. That's the point of these sort of conversations is like, I want to have conversations on my podcast that show people media that is worth thinking about, you know, because I mean, again, we don't have to be unwitting victims of this MK Ultra plot. We can take a different approach, and from that point of view, this media becomes something that you think about and you grow from, rather than having it impress itself upon you and then subconsciously now you're acting through this stimuli, right? I think that's
right.
The difference is you can actively watch something or you can passively watch something. And part of what I enjoy about conversations like this is, yeah, hearing how you actively watch this media. And, you know, one podcast I was listening to earlier today, a gentleman who you might be familiar with, Steven Snyder. He's got the Farm podcast. Great.
He's been on Wake the Dead. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're familiar with him. He's a great guy. And he was talking about this TV show that I had never heard of before, but I started watching it. He had a guest on named Robert Guffey, and they're both talking about The Prisoner, which is a television
show. Oh, wow. Yeah, dude.
You know about it. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. It's so Gnosticism, like 101. Yeah, yeah.
Well, break it down then, your interpretation of it, because this is something that's a little more recent for me, and I'd like to introduce it to my audience. Obviously, if people want to go and check out The Farm, you know, I don't want to piggyback too hard on their episode, but they just put out
two good
episodes on that.
I am not an expert on this, but it's like this guy was like trapped in this place, given a number, and he's trying to figure it out. And
Patrick
what am
McEwen,
I?
Who's the main actor? He's like the director and actor creator of the show. And yeah, he's number six. He gets basically resigns from his job as what we assume is a spy, a government job.
Right.
And then he's basically kidnapped and brought to this place that he can't escape.
Right. And it kind of relates to your soul is trapped in this hell of Gnosticism, like this Gnostic prison. Right. So it's like very heavy with those themes. And that's kind of the esoteric theme that it runs on. If people want to learn more, they can look up Unslaved guy, Michael Tessarion, did a lot.
Oh yeah, Mike Tessarion. Yeah, yeah.
I don't like that person particularly, but he did a lot of talk about. He went deep into that show, and so
yeah,
and people can learn from him.
Yeah. And I'm all for hearing why. You wouldn't, because I don't know that much about Michael Tessarion, but I will say that when I attempted to have him on my podcast and other podcasts, he wasn't interested. So that's fair. He's got the right to reject an offer or an invitation.
Right.
But we did have a friend of his on instead, someone who I guess he does
David
trust
Whitehead.
To talk to. Yeah, David Whitehead. And,
yeah, that guy.
David's interesting. I haven't had him on in a while, but... But yeah.
Yeah, I've met them. I've met him. I met him at Free Your Mind. And, Michael Tessarion is not an anarchist. He's got a show called Unslaved. And I've heard his voice on a recording saying that human beings do not deserve freedom. They need to be, there needs to be a constitutional monarchy.
Yeah.
Because people are too stupid.
Now, do you think this could be cynicism? I mean, the guy has
he's saying this into the microphone. Doesn't matter what his emotions are inside.
Yeah, I'm not trying to justify it. I just try to make sense of it. It seems
well, sure. I mean, everybody says stupid shit, like, but an old friend of mine sat down for like 3 hours trying to explain the principles of anarchy to David Whitehead. And he was speaking on behalf of Michael also. And he's like, we just believe this and you can't fix us, basically. And so it's kind of hard being a principled anarchist in this milieu of, you know, it's like, it's also hard being a round earther or whatever, you know what I mean? Because everybody is just like, they have their beliefs that they're comfortable with.
Right.
They don't want to challenge, you know? And so Michael Tessarion believes that people are too dumb for freedom. And I believe that freedom is too precious to keep away from dumb people. Like, who are you to decide who deserves freedom? Like, you know, it gets in my craw really.
Yeah.
But he's a nice, I don't know if he's nice. Other than that, he's done a lot of good work and he's like dedicated to his thing that, you know, and I'm not saying like he's bad, but I just have a problem with him. That's all. You know?
Well, it's good to know. I think we need to be able to assess a character by the whole of their personality and beliefs if we're going to take what they are purporting as true, authentic research is serious. Right. I mean, yeah, to know somebody's political bent is a bias that is, you know, informative as far as, you know, where they stand on a number of things. So
it's just ironic that he has a show that you have to pay to listen to.
Oh, trust me.
And it's called Unslaved.
Yeah, I'm well aware. I think it's, yeah. It's
kind I'm very ironic.
Yeah. Well, and there is also, you know, a big wave of people that, let's use this word politely, grifted off of the COVID pandemic stuff. And that was very much what David Whitehead was on the show to talk about, this sort of like idea that I had only heard him talk about, and nowhere else had anyone else been talking about this in this way. So that's always interesting and brings a level of skepticism to a conversation that maybe I wouldn't.
Yeah, just put that in your hat and just,
well, and Sean, to be fair, you and I, you know, I'm definitely more of an anarchist than anything else. So you and I have a sort of shared bias that makes our conversations easier, I think. But
right, I agree.
Part of my goal of the podcast is not to have people on that only agree with me, right? So
of course,
I'd have Tessarion and Whitehead on the show again, and
right. You
know, they could tell me how they feel about everything I just
said. They could tell you how they don't like me. You know what I mean? But yeah. I mean, it's, you know, like I agree. I would actually talk to him. I would like to have a whole conversation about that and ask him why he believes that and be
oftentimes,
like,
oftentimes these are the types of people that don't want to engage in open discussion. And that's usually another indication of something. As soon as you call their motives or their authenticity in the question, they step away from the debate or the conversation, which again is their right. I don't ever want to be this
can't fight with truth, you know.
Yeah, like I don't want to hold anybody's feet to the flame with this show. I think everybody, you know, is going to operate within their means, and you know, you can judge a book by its cover and you know them by their colors or whatever the phrase is, right? So
yeah their fruits of their tree or whatever that Jesus said, you know, by their fruits.
But getting back to these directors, because again these aren't people that we personally know, so I feel a little more about speculating about someone like Terry Gilliam.
Or I think Terry Gilliam was one of the good guys.
Well, and let's talk about this, because you know, again, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is a strange film. Obviously, he didn't write the story. Hunter S. Thompson did, a strange character. But Johnny Depp, again, Benicio del Toro, there's a lot of, you know, players in this film. And we see that a lot, you know, comes to the Hollywood magic. Like, they tend to use a lot of the same people who seem to, again, have patterns to their interests and behavior, right? Johnny Depp is another occult sort of.
Yeah, and he works with Gilliam a lot.
Right. So tell me about like your interpretation, because again, Monty Python, this is a big, he's got a lot of great films.
Yeah, he, so he like directed the Holy Grail, and I don't think he did Life of Brian. I think that was the other guy, the guy that played King Arthur.
I think he was involved to some extent, like collaborating.
Of course. He was like the American, like the sixth member or whatever.
Yeah, he directed them or something.
Right. But he, I think like he just had talent, and like it was undeniable, you know, kind of like in the music, like, you know, Jimi Hendrix, I don't think he was groomed and grew up to be one of them. Like he just had talent, you know what I mean? And like broke in because they're like, whoa,
right,
we can use that guy. Like, you know, look how great. Kind of the same thing with Kubrick. Like his talent with photography, they were like, oh, you know,
right.
It, like Hartman is telling Gomer Pyle, like while he's on the rifle range and he's shooting good, and he's like, oh, we finally found something you do well, like shooting, you know, just what Kubrick, you know, anyway. But the thing with Terry Gilliam is that the studios hate him and they won't let him do anything. And it's like he tries to get movies made and he can't get them paid for because the corporate whatever, they think he's a goofball. He's uncontrollable and he's like a real artist, you know. And he did this Baron Munchausen and everything went wrong and it's like it was cursed and they had to like cobble together this movie. Eric Idle, I think, was the main character, and it was really silly and weird. And that's what Terry Gilliam's really good at, silly and weird, right? So that's why they were like, okay, let's let him do Fear and Loathing, you know, just like how they wouldn't let Alejandro Jodorowsky, they wouldn't let him make Dune. Like, he was going to make Dune in the 70s with Mick Jagger and Salvador Dali and Pink Floyd. And, you know, he put together the artistic collaboration of the people that ended up making Alien. And, you know what I mean? He like created this wonderful thing, and then he had it all storyboarded and they wouldn't let him make it. They were let for years, and, you know, in parties, they're all looking at this thing and being like, wow, this is the best movie ever. And they just wouldn't give them the money. So I think there's like a lot of conflict, you know. Kubrick was able to get what he wanted done within budget, and he was very smart about dealing with how to get what, you know, his vision made. And because his talent was so good, they couldn't deny him, you know, but, or maybe they could, but, you know, whatever, they chose not to. But, so Terry Gilliam, like, I think the success that he had with 12 Monkeys led to his becoming chosen for Fear and Loathing. And the Johnny Depp thing was, I don't think Terry Gilliam like knows about what Johnny Depp does. You know, I don't think he knows that Johnny Depp chopped off the end of his finger and sewed it up to look like a penis because of a black magic ritual. You know what I mean? Like, he probably just thinks, oh, he's an actor.
I've never heard that. Tell me about that.
Well, okay. So like genital mutilation is like part of black magic a lot of times.
Right.
And a lot of times magicians will substitute their hands for like other parts of their body. So like, instead of chopping off or part of or whatever, I mean, some of the, like the, you know, the male priests of Inanna, they chop everything off, you know, and then they go and dress like a woman. And like, it's very sick and weird. It's like fucking psychos. But basically, look at Podesta, you know, that dude Podesta, and he had like he was holding up his hands and there was like numbers on his hands and they were all mangled and weird. Because I think it's because that's all the rituals that he's been through. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of times magicians will do things that are visible. You know what I mean? Like the dude who, Shrek, you know, the dude, the Satanist there, Nicholas Shrek, like he chopped off his ear. Like, everybody can see that. You know what I mean? And he's like got some story about, oh, I was studying Charles Manson and really, somehow somebody else chopped my ear off with a sword, like somebody just like Charlie Manson. Like, it's very weird, and you know, like the weirdest fucking stupid story. But obviously it was like, you know, it's a dark ritual, you know what I mean? Chopped off the right ear, you know, like I'm not listening to God anymore, you know, only the left side. Like, you know, it's there's a lot to it. And so your body is involved in the ritual. You have to, like, you know, a lot of times there's like eating or drinking, and like there's body processes involved as well as mangling yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And so that, I believe that that's what Johnny Depp did. He says that he was getting in a fight with his girlfriend and he like threw a bottle into a mirror and it like chopped his finger. And, but then when they sewed it back together, they made it look like a penis. Like, is that on purpose?
I tried to find a picture. There's none that are like close up. But yeah.
But the story, you know, of the story, and it's like whatever.
The story, I mean, it checks out. I just looked it up. I'd never heard that before, but I guess it had been a part of the court proceedings for that whole debacle that was very much publicized. So, yeah, that's interesting. I can imagine, you know.
When you. I'm sorry.
Goes deeper than that. You know, you can think of like these like blood brother packs where people will cut their finger and handshake.
Oh, yeah.
So it's been portrayed in films and stuff. I don't remember ever doing that as a kid, seriously, but it definitely came up as a kid, like when you're like a little latchkey kid like I was, like hanging out with all kinds of, who knows, other bad kids. Like, well,
you see it in the 80s films though, right? Like, didn't they do that in like Stand By
Me? And then that, you know, made its way into people's ideas, and then people actually did it, you know. I witnessed
it. That's how they get you.
Right. Well, that's the thing. The overall theme, I think, of this conversation is how, media is, in essence, this sort of mind control program, this like experiment that we're all participating in, unknowingly. I mean, again, like we're constantly programmed by the programming that's presented to us.
Right. Like at the end of Full Metal Jacket, Kubrick has them all like sing the Mickey Mouse Club song.
Right.
Because they're all the same age and they all watch TV together and the same, you know, they all had the same TV. You know what I mean? So they all got the same programming across the whole thing. And then they later got the same programming with their, you know, in boot camp. But like the Mickey Mouse Club is like first level of the same kind of programming that they were getting, you know, and Hartman was yelling in their face, and, you know, making them do push-ups and stuff.
Right. Well, and to take it back to The Prisoner with Patrick McGowan, like, again, people should listen to those episodes of The Farm with Steven and their whole breakdown of it. But just to get back to that, because knowing that you've seen it too, I mean, it's really fascinating to think that what they're portraying in this television show, where these spies are kind of basically taken as a forced retirement home. And the idea that Steven and Robert suggested is that, you know, maybe what we're seeing in the village where these spies are held, it's like a think tank for how to sort of then create that on a macro scale where the entire world is controlled by this one world government using things like hallucinogenic drugs, identity theft, mind control, dream manipulation, and forms of social indoctrination and physical coercion.
I gotta listen to that. Steven's great. Like, I gotta listen to the show.
Well, and you know, this show is also, I mean, it's a relic of its time in the sense that they were able to portray these things in fiction with the understanding that the public was sort of thinking of it in terms of the Cold War. So there was a license to show espionage and MKUltra techniques, because it was under the guise of, well, this is a part of the, you know, Cold War effort, right? And
that's
kind of, now we don't see that as much in media. I mean, obviously, you gave us Fringe as an example. Stranger Things. There's so many examples.
Of course,
In the recent media of like this kind of these themes, it's ubiquitous. It's always present. But yeah, with this show, I guess stop there and let people go and
watch it
and check out that video. But I want to ask you your thoughts on it in terms of what you said about it being Gnostic and Gnosticism in general, because it does, depending on who you're talking to, sometimes people will put Gnosticism in the same vein as Satanism, that Gnosticism is one of the original attempts to sort of, I don't know, bastardize what the church said, you know.
So, right.
So, yeah.
But, I mean, also, it was the original Jesus church. A lot of them were Gnostics. You know what I mean? The Albigensians and the Dead Sea Scroll guys there,
Well, but that's the thing is, like, if you look at the, let's say, the Orthodox Church, they're saying that none of that is a part of the original church. And, I mean, obviously the Dead Sea Scrolls, you know, there's
Orthodox or Catholic. I mean,
Catholic, I think the Catholic Church is, according to some guests we've had on, Johnny Cerucci.
He's Hoffman. Great. He's a friend.
Johnny's awesome. But, you know, according to Michael Hoffman and Johnny Cerucci, like, the Catholic Church is not, you know, Christian anymore. So
no, it never was.
Example.
No, the Catholic Church is worshiping Semiramis.
Yeah, I'm not again.
It's Babylon.
I'm curious what you think of Gnosticism because
right.
It sounds like you might be coming from that point of view. I don't know. What do you?
I believe that this. I believe that this is a good place. I do believe it's good to be here and to be alive in a body. You know, so a lot of the Gnostics think that this is a hell where we're trapped. You know, and like ultimately the Satanists think that they should be able to do anything, but there is natural law and they're mad about that. You know, they have to have morality to be in this place and not have chaos and pain, you know, like we have today every day. So like they are, it, you know, so in a sense that too is a Gnosticism. They don't believe, but I don't know, but they do. I mean, true Satanists aren't really atheists. They recognize that this is, it has been created. You know what right. I mean? The Luciferians too, like, the atheists are like the Levayan level of like, you know, the Anton LaVey followers that wear black shirts and stuff like this. That's where I was at for a while in my life, actually. But I mean, I grew up, you know.
What took you out of that? I mean, so when you were like a teenager, you were sort of interested in that? What was going on?
I was full on hate religion. All religion is evil. In a way, I'm kind of not really moved on from that, you know, but I mean, just because it's control without free will, where it's a system, a lot of religions are a system of obedience to a master, which I obviously don't agree with. We talked about our anarchists, you know, but people like Johnny Cerucci get it, where he has a one-on-one with Jesus through the book. You know, and his mind and his heart can like understand the teachings and he doesn't need to be obedient. You know what I mean? Like, I grew up, I think, I don't know. I hated people. I hated everything. I only listened to the most ruthless death metal, like Cannibal Corpse, like Deicide. And I did it on purpose. It was like a choice, you know. It was really weird. I had my dad was an alcoholic and my parents got divorced and I'm like the third kid who got like forgot about, you know. And so there's a lot of like psychological thing and, you know, my circumcision trauma and like all these other things, you know what I mean? My parents would kick me out and then the other one would kick me out and the other one would kick me out. And I have, you know, so I have this like psychological issues, I guess. I don't know. Like a lot of people do, you know, or did. And I expressed my hatred for that control. And I recognize that religion, pretty much all religions are binding people into slavery, you know. And I didn't look past to see what else was the same, you know. And now I've grown up to recognize that, you know, government is the same. And, you know, like the systems of money and shit, those are all slavery levels, you know what I mean? Like education and public school. And so, like, I've like expanded my knowledge and I recognize that people are good, you know, we're born good. And like, I've came to that belief. It took a lot, like, I don't know. I can't really say any one thing, but, I don't know. Like, I hated myself. So I hated others and maybe like I kind of grew and learn to love myself more. And so I could see, maybe, I don't know, like I can't really put it into words, but I grew out of it. I Like any stranger is like, I recognize that there is a soul. Like before, I didn't even think love was real. I thought it was just chemicals in your head, you know, like dopamine and stuff. Like it's just like a, you know, how you can get like that kind of same feeling if you take MDMA, you know what I mean? Like, so I was like in this
It wasn't like a single event that turned everything for you. It was a gradual sort of growth of like realizing and changing slowly, learning to love yourself, that kind of steered you away from, let's say, a darker, negative, self-destructive expression of culture, which is like that whole world of death metal and all.
Right.
Yeah.
Like people would be like, dude, do you listen to this when you're just chilling, like trying to be relaxing and shit? I'd be like, yeah. What? And they just look at me like I had a third head there, you know. Anyway, like, I mean, I was just very, like, you know, if you ever listen to Deicide, it's just like, blame it on God, blame it on God, you know, like, what was that doing? You know? But I mean, you know, the first time I listened to Cannibal Corpse, I actually felt sick to my stomach, and I continued listening to become, because I knew I wanted to like it. It's very weird. Like, I don't know. Like, I consciously chose. And so it's like learning to like cigarettes, you know, like the first time you try a cigarette, it's like, oh, well, but then you go and like, have another puff, you know, it's weird.
It sounds like a form of self-harm, you know, like you felt like you weren't cared for. Maybe there's abuse going on in the family, and that was a way of taking the power back by, you know, unfortunately, I mean, owning the abuse in a sense.
It wasn't like they weren't hitting me, but it was like they were like just done being a family, you know, and so I was just kind of kicking around. They just didn't really care, you know. It was weird. Like I got kicked out of catechism, which is like a Catholic school.
Oh, yeah, I grew up Catholic, so I went to catechism too.
Right, right. So I got kicked out for asking logical questions. It was really. And the main dude like came into the class and like yelled at me.
No, some deacon or some basic,
yeah, like
the main formal title for kid toucher,
Father Tom. Like that's the dude. Yeah. Anyway, he came in and he like yelled at me in front of everybody, and he said, "Get out! You're not allowed to be here anymore."
Wow,
mind control. So I went home. Yeah, like you won't agree with our mind control. We can't fix you. Get the hell out.
Well, and also and like the exile of like making you an example in front of the other kids.
Right.
In like reinforcing their, you know, complacency.
Look how bad that he is. I'm glad I'm one of us and not one of them.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's an indication that you're meant to be greater. I think a lot of
people, thanks, man.
No, of course. And I think a lot, everybody's meant for greatness in a sense, but you know, when you're put in a position where you recognize that what's happening to you isn't right, you have, you know, two choices. You can continue that trauma and abuse, or you can step out of it and own your freedom. And to me, it feels like that's what being an anarchist is about for you in a way. Like, you found anarchism and you found this path of truth that now allows you to step away from what is your past and become more of yourself. Right.
I think I recognize the truth, you know, like I recognize in reality, we are living in anarchy. We all do have free will. You know, I got these principles now. Like I recognize
that makes me want to ask you, because you distinguish like natural law and and I guess like the idea that, you know, we're kind of living under the auspice of some god, some creator. So do you, and again, this isn't coming from my own bias or me wanting to agree with you or anything, or you to agree with me.
Okay.
Do you identify that way? Do you believe in a creator? And if not, like, where do you think natural law is sort of like a part of that or not a part of that? You get what I'm trying to say? Like, natural law baked into the fabric of reality?
Yes. It's baked into the fabric of humanity. Like you can tell, because when you hurt something you love, you feel bad.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is like, just recognize your own biological processes and like, oh, that must mean something. Right. You know, like, if you can recognize that you own yourself and that being hurt by others is bad, then you can extrapolate that knowledge into recognizing that hurting others is bad. You know, because you can be the one that hurts others, so you can change your behavior, right? And then you look at the world, at natural law, right? It's not like, it's the whole world, everything. Like, you look at the trees and the bugs and the everything has, like, you know, if you get in a fight with a monkey, like, it's gonna fight you back. You're not allowed to harm others. You know, it's just all animals have claws and teeth, you know what I'm saying? Like, we have guns. Like, anyway, it's like, you just have to recognize the truth of the world. And the Satanists kind of, like, I don't know, I keep harping on the Satanists, but bear with me, people. These evil psychopaths, they want you to think, oh, the law of the jungle, law of the jungle. And look at the predator. Ooh, look how it dominates. You know, like, you know, in the beginning of 2001, like, one of the apes gets, like, eaten by a cougar, like, right in front of the camera. Like, this is the reality. But then if you actually look at the whole scope of the thing, like, everything in the background, when you're looking at just the one lion and the one gazelle or whatever, everything that is surrounding it is also life that is working in symbiosis with each other. Like, you know, like the little birds work with the rhino. Know what I mean? The plants work nature. With the bees. Exactly. Yeah, right.
This symbiotic nature to ecosystems. Absolutely.
Exactly.
And there's something inherently, satanic about wanting to step. I guess that's kind of the definition of it, in a sense, is to step out of that, to try to dominate that process.
Right. To, if you only focus on the action of the running cheetah and the gazelle or whatever, then you're not focusing on the rest of the whole world, which is like 99% of the world is living in symbiosis with its true will.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning into this episode. Let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors and our newest Patreon supporters. I will say, this episode was recorded last year, so I waited to release it because I knew we had Sean booked on Tinfoil Hat, and I just didn't want to put the episode out before and have Sam say, oh, look, you're having all the same guests as we do before we do, blah, blah, blah. Whatever. Sam is the best. But, you know, either way, I sat on this episode, so it might feel a little outdated. We were not talking about the Epstein stuff. If we did, it was, again, outdated. But anyways, big shout out to Ryan C., Chris A., Simon S., Whitney K., Todd, Venus, nope, not Venus, sorry, Justine, Heaving Apples, and Ryan N. I think that's everybody who's signed up since I last gave these shout-outs. So thank you so much to everybody for signing up to support the show on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/MFTIC. While the $2 and $3 tiers are still available, they will not be available for long. And let's move on to thank our sponsors, Vibe MedX. That's VIBEMEDX.com. The number one source of Shilajit. You can get it in resin form. You can get the tablets. It's an amazing supplement. Listen, If you're not familiar with what Sheila Jeet does, go back and listen to my interviews with Ron, the founder of Vibe MedX, and you'll discover why this adaptogenic supplement is a must-have if you care about your health and taking your health seriously. Sheila Jeet can be that missing puzzle piece you're looking for. So go do the research and use the promo code CRAZY at VibeMedX when you do yourself a favor and order Sheila Jeet today. That's the promo code CRAZY at VibeMedX.com. Now, let's take a quick break to go to our dynamic ads. Remember, if you want every episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast ad-free and interruption-free, sign up at patreon.com/MFTIC. All right, we'll be back in a moment. This message was brought to you today by Hims, hims.com. Listen, your family might think you're crazy, and that's okay, but don't let them think you're unhealthy. If you've got weight loss goals, we're going to help you hit them with Hims, okay? This is weight loss by Hims, designed to support you in losing the weight and keeping it off. Hims now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including Wegovy. You don't just lose the weight, you feel better. So hit those goals with Hims, with Wegovy at Hims. You can lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite and eat less, so success is within reach. Plus, Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill, so there's no needles needed. That's right, it's just a pill. So if you're ready to reach your goals, visit hims.com/crazy to get a personalized, affordable plan that gets you. That's hims.com/crazy, hims.com/crazy. Weight loss by Hims is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information and restrictions, visit hims.com. Yes, summer is almost here, but it's not too late to spring into style with Quince. Yes, Quince is an affordable luxury brand that sells high-quality fashion and home goods at radically low prices, direct from the factory floor. The company has pioneered a manufacturer-to-consumer retail model, and factories produce inventory on near just-in-time basis and ship their goods directly to consumers' doorsteps, cutting out financial and environmental waste. We love cutting out environmental waste on this show. And on that note about things I love the linen chore coat that I got thanks to Quince and this show. Quince hooked me up with a coupon, and they're hooking you up with a discount if you use the promo code CRAZY today at quince.com. That's Quince.com. And again, I love the linen chore jacket. It's the perfect weight. It's the perfect softness. It's great for not so warm evenings in the spring, right? You know, things are still kind of just unraveling. Summer is finally coming in up here in New England. So a nice linen chore coat is the perfect thing to keep my skin nice and safe from the hot sun, and also keep me nice and warm from the chilly air. Oh, thank you, Quince. Oh, I feel so good in my Quince linen chore jacket. Let me tell you, folks, go to quince.com and use the promo code CRAZY now to save. It's not just clothes. They have all kinds of great stuff. Check it out today. It's got the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy seal of approval.
Working with others, not harming, you know,
right?
And even the, you know, even the cheetahs, they only get the old ones and the feeble right. ones.
Within the proper context, you realize that it's a balancing sort of thing where the predators right. are actually helping preserve the overall environment. Because if there right. weren't predators to eat the prey animals, then the prey animals would overgraze and then the plants would die right. and then the whole environment would be spoiled. So there's a right. balancing that happens right. there. Yeah.
But absolutely. Then if you take that and then you like sprinkle in some immorality, then the and you think you're a separate being than the rest of humanity, then oh, we need to cull off all these people. There's too many of them. We need to save the world, you know. So like you got to be careful like not to fall into that, because like we also, the fact that like all of the background of the murder of the elk or whatever is nature. Also, we are nature. Yeah. So like we can't think of ourselves as separate, you know, like our body is made of earth, like all the elements.
Yeah.
They've just been put together. Like our soul is just riding in this thing, right?
Yeah. It's the same way, you know, an ant colony repurposes the space that it takes to use its home. You know, it's not destroying the earth because it goes and makes all these cavities in a tree or the ground somewhere. Like this right. overall is beneficial for
right.
if you take things wide enough. I mean, humans, again, like we tend to, at least the governments tend to overestimate
our population
impact as individuals and underestimate right. their impact as major corporations, the military, the large polluters, right? They're like,
funny
it's
that,
you right? guys, it's you guys, your carbon footprint and your cow farts. It's right. not us.
But they want us to hate jet. Ourselves.
Right.
Like well, I was doing when I was listening to Deicide.
Well, let's unpack some of this, because the whole culture that created the possibility of something like death metal to even be a possibility.
They named it Death after a guy named Death who started the whole Swedish white face thing, who shot himself with a shotgun, and then his bandmates took a picture of it and made it the cover of their next album.
Yeah, yeah.
See, this is where it came from. That type of psychopathy. I'm sorry to please continue.
No, yeah, and I'm sure there's some strange connections to those people. You know, these kind of things don't make it to, you know, influence others unless there's some sort of kernel of a connection to the larger culture. Like they farm these what we think are underground and independent right. movements, they farm those out.
They find the most psycho ones, right? Like yeah. if they found Gigi Allen, you know.
Well, but let's unpack this, because you know, people will hear maybe us talking about this and the Satanists and all this stuff, like, oh, sure. Where does this go back to? Like, what, you know, you can't just, there's a sense of like, I don't know, where's the origin, right? Because this is,
I think it's the Gnosticism
industrial complex. Well, I don't mean that far back. I'm talking
okay.
like when we're looking in the context of like what Stanley Kubrick was observing in his time period and where Satanism was then. Where it came from as a part of maybe the military industrial complex. Have you done any research into that? Because I've heard here and there that major aspects of American culture, maybe Freemasonry, have been basically, you know, infiltrated by groups of people that by any other name are Satanists. Yeah, obviously.
Well, read Albert Pike from New Report, Massachusetts. He wrote Morals and Dogma, and you read that book, and he'll say that Lucifer is the god. That's what they do. I mean, that's their. And he was into the theosophy and all that stuff, but Lucifer was like a whole Prometheus type of shit, you know, like bringing knowledge and the light of knowledge and darkness is ignorance type of thing. I think that really Satanism comes from psychopathy. I think it is like the crystallization of psychopathy. whether psychopathy is natural in humans or if it's imposed on us by trauma, I don't know. People like Mark Passio talk about, like, there's primary psychopaths who are born that way, and there's secondary psychopaths who, like, train themselves into it, you know? And I was going down the road of the secondary psychopath for a while there, you know? And that's how I can know so much about it, I guess, and recognize it in myself or whatever, you know? It's like, if you got people that have no morals and have to use their left brain to, like, fake emotions and have secrets and they want to have their crimes covered up, you know, and have like the secret societies are a natural flowering of psychopathy, you know what I mean? They want to work together with each other to prey on the others, you know what I mean? Like, they always choose pedophiles and shit because they're the best at keeping secrets and being totally heartless and evil. You know, they can rape their own kids, so put them in charge of the military. You know, the military has always been satanic. People, like I mentioned Passio just now, but people should watch. Passio did a presentation called Demystifying the Occult, and part two was, or no, I think he even did a whole thing about the police and military. I mean, he talked about how all the symbols are occult, you know, like the purple, what do you call it? The purple heart or whatever. That's got, like, it's got the maiden goddess, like, and it's got like a trapezoid, and it's got like, it's got all kinds of evil shit, but it's like, other people don't know, normal people don't know, but, you know, the longtime generational Satanists know exactly what it is. And that's why they put the star upside down, you know, like the one that Forrest Gump got, it's got an upside down 5-pointed star. I mean, it's kind of in your face. Like, everybody knows that symbol, right? But, and then it's got the trapezoid, and it's got these colors, and it's got these perfect, you know. And like, if you, and then he teaches you about, like, the hat of a police officer is an octagon on purpose, you know, and it caps off the crown chakra, you know, like it's, and it's a black hat, you know, like being under the black square, and like, but it's an octagon. So it's like the tesseract in two dimensions, and it like represents the prison of the mind, you know, and it's just showing everyone how cops are totally under mind control. It's really interesting. People should listen to that. But yeah, that just proves that the military, and if you listen to like Kay Griggs or whatever, everybody should listen to Kay Griggs' interview where she describes her husband, who was naval intelligence, and the stuff that he was into is like all super soldier trauma based, you know, a bunch of faggotry, like to, you know, same as the, like the Templars and stuff. You know, I'm sorry if it was a bad word. Don't want to mean to offend anybody. But
say how you speak, how you.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's good. I'm from Massachusetts. I don't know. But yeah, like, you know, they're like, the Gnostics, they're into, not bringing more souls into the world, you know, like this is a trap and don't do that, you know. And, you know, like a lot of the, you know, the old Gnostics would like have this, like the Cathars would like have this consolamentum, I think is the word, where at the end of their life they would like be pescatarian and like not have sex, and like it would like atone for all of the engaging in the world and having children, and like, oh, I gotta, you know, make up for my sins of like being a worldly. But it's anyway, I think that the psychopathy is where it came from. I think that is the core of it. And if you really study it and look into it and look, everybody that is doing, and the morality is the clues that you can tell, you know, if someone, you know, you watch it like what we were saying earlier, like watch their fruits and see what they do.
Well, and let me ask you this, because I feel like I kind of grew to a similar level of, I would call it, you might not call it this, but I would call it cynicism with the world. And it was a sort of 1-2 punch of like, yeah, culture is the modern culture that we're given for the most part is, as you're kind of describing it, you know, maybe without using the term satanic, I would say it
pretty close on
self-destruction. It promotes, you know, personal degradation. It promotes, you know, all of the sort of lower sort of emotions or base sort of
urges. That's how they get you.
Violence, sex, you know, tragedy, these sort of comedy, even to some extent, when it's not thoughtful, I think can be used in this way to, you know, you look at the beginning of comedy and it was like the most childish crap, you know, Three Stooges level of like,
well, the TV comedy, right? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, look, I, you know, the jesters of the king had like high art, you know.
And we've had, Paul, what's his last name? Do you know who I'm thinking of right now? Paul something or other. My apologies. Understanding Conspiracy Paul. I forget his last name at the moment. But he told us basically the origins of the jester and how it goes back to like portraying essentially.
Oh, yeah. The Nephilim Mark Clowns guy.
Yes, you know.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah.
Yeah, Paul's great. Paul Stobbs is his name.
Awesome.
Just remembered it. But yeah, it's something that I think for the most part, it's a 1-2 punch. You have culture, mainstream culture, this sort of atheistic sort of, again, degradation of the self. And then a lot of people's response to that is, oh, well, I'm going to go and take the pious route and become religious. But then you realize a lot of these religious institutions, for the most part, have been corrupted, right? And that's
right.
What I ask you, like, with someone who thinks this way and feels this way, like, where do you stand and how do you, you know, keep your head up and continue to love yourself in a world where, yeah, I mean,
it's actually tough.
Become cynical.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. I even had a show with my friend James Cordner on Black Pill Digest, where we just like looked at the most ruthless shit. Like, just, but I mean,
James is great. Shout out to James Cordner.
Yeah, we love James. That's great. Yeah. But anyway, like, I don't go to church. I don't read the Bible. You know, I see like those as like good acts for some people to reinforce in their mind, and rituals are good for some people. I think that every day when I just talk to people, you know, like doing my job, like now I'm driving a truck and I'm like delivering packages to people and they're all like, oh, hey. And I talk to them. In the old day, I used to drive a taxi. I used to talk to people, having this show, talking to people, you know? So like I see people and that reassures me. And like, I even talked to cops for a while. I was working at a gas station overnight and they would come in for coffee, you know, and I would always ask them about like, you know, would you go into people's houses to take their guns, you know, and they would get into it. They'd talk about it. And I get to learn, like, I trust humans. I think humanity is ultimately a good thing. Like, they are doing good and they have good intentions. I mean, you got to clear away the ignorance, but so like that's what gives me hope, really. And I, you know, I've got a son and I see how he's growing, and yeah, I recognize the magic of the world. I mean, I do, maybe I'll say that I did, because I do not incriminate myself, but I'm a fan of psychedelics, and I think that has helped me to learn myself and understand, you know, myself, I guess. And I don't go to therapy or whatnot, you know, but I do think, and I do dig deeper into my own whatever, you know. I've discovered that circumcision is a big thing in my life, and you know, I talk about it, and it like heals me, it helps, you know. And like talking about psychopathy and talking about how humanity is like is enslaved, the talking kind of helps to heal it in, I don't know, like it, it's like I'm participating in the world, and I think I'm bringing beneficial things, I guess. But it really, it's cathartic to be a part of this and to like have the show and to be able to channel the, if I didn't have a show and I was just like typing into Facebook about how I, you know, I hate how they cut baby penises or something, you know, like it's just like yelling into the void, and it's just like a total waste of time. And like, really, it's just me getting angry and nobody notices, nobody cares, doesn't do anything. But like now I've grown into, you know, putting my voice on the airwaves and whatnot. And, I don't think I open my channel and my true self pushes the words, you know, and, I find that I trust that. And I guess that's really where, that's really, I don't know, I guess just being a real human. It is tough though. Like I have like these loops in my head, like, you know, because of my own whatever I had to deal with growing up, you know, or what was imprinted in me or what I choose to, you know, like, so there's always the uncovering and the change and the growing. And like, I'm proud of what I've grown into, you know. I used to be doubtful of everything and not trusting anyone, and trusting is still kind of tough sometimes, but I do trust that people are good, you know, but like trusting them with my money or whatever is tough, you know, sometimes. But anyway, I don't mean to get, I'm all over the place right now. I think really just being a true human and seeing real humans and recognizing that in others, and like I don't fear, like I'll deliver packages in the dark in like East Cleveland and some of the worst neighborhoods. And, you know, every door that opens is like, hi, you know, it's like, hey, yeah, like you're welcome. Like I'll knock on the door. They'll be like, who is it? You know, I'll be like, you know, package delivery. They're like, oh, you know, all of a sudden, like I'm friend. And like, I see that, everybody's good. Doesn't matter what, who or where. And I was homeless for a while, like I chose to be and living free. I would go into different cities, I'd meet all these other homeless people and different Walmarts, and I'd go into the rich places, and like I'd meet everybody and talk to everybody. I think that talking is helpful. I think that that is really connecting with people. Before I was like, oh, I hate everything. Yeah. And
where's the most difficult place you were homeless? You said you went to multiple cities. Where was it most difficult?
I guess California is the worst, and we were just visiting, really. But if you're parked on the wrong side of the road on the wrong day, like you get a ticket for $150. Like you can't park in any Walmart overnight anywhere in California. What is that? Like Walmart's code has always been travelers can be in the same parking space for 90 days. You know what I mean? Like they're welcome because it's a huge market, you know, and the Walmart's right there next to the highway, you know. A lot of them were 24 hours for a while. But anyway, you can't park overnight anywhere. Like to, I, and I was always in a car. I was never like in a tent or like walking.
Yeah.
I got to know many of them, you know, and I was always moving. And like, I got many tips from Freeman Fly. Actually, he became a friend. Many people should know his show, The Free Zone. He's an old school, like he's been doing for years. And, we went to rainbow gatherings and, you know, I went to visit him at his house a few times. And like, I was already homeless when I first visited him and he gave me all these tips. He's like, dude, you got to keep it moving. You know, like you gotta like every, you don't stop for more than 2 weeks. And that like makes sense. Now I know, because like, even like you know, you're visiting people or you're in a place, like if you're going to find a sign or something, if they see you on the same street corner, they don't give you money anymore. They're like, F this dude, he's just going to set up shop here. Like they don't want homeless people around, you know, they'll be nice to you for a while until they recognize your face. But it's weird. Like, it's, and I got to like learn a lot about people's, the way that they view, like the caste system of America, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, like I was on Hampton Beach, New Hampshire, and I was sitting on the ground, whatever, like I was sitting on the ground. Okay. And, we had a sign, you know, my friend and I, and we had actually a very silly sign. It was like, we made like a little spin wheel, like with a straw and like an extra piece of cardboard. And it said, unemployed hypnotist, you want to give us your money? That's really funny. And like they were, but anyway, like these people, like this mom was with her kid and she was like, look at them on the ground. Like what? Like what's wrong with the ground, you know? And she like had this stern face and was like kind of yanking like as they're going past. And you know, and other people like this same beach, actually Hampton Beach, this one dude was like trying to give me like $1,000 for my dog. He was like, your dog can't be homeless. This is a great dog. You can't have this dog. Like take my money. I was like, no, you know, F you. Like, it was really weird. And, you know, I got to meet a lot of weird people, but California is definitely the worst. If people are homeless in California, they should get the hell out. Like it's,
yeah.
And people go there on purpose when they're, you know, they live on Venice Beach and they get a climb out of their tent and smoke a bong. And I mean, Venice Beach is nice there, but they fucking, they roll through the street with like a garbage truck, like every week or something. They just take everything they see and throw it in the truck. Like you can't, like, it's really, yeah, it's pretty ruthless. And I'd hate to see what Trump is doing now with his whole shit, you know what I mean?
What era was that when you were in? What time period was that when you were in California, or at least Venice Beach? Because I remember
maybe like, it was 7 years ago, 7 years ago,
2018.
Yeah, probably around there.
Yeah, I remember reading about Venice Beach when I was like in high school. We were looking up like things on the computer, and I remember reading like some article about like best places to be homeless in America, and
it's pretty nice. Number
one spot.
Because it's like warm all the time, and it's like just. But I mean, it's, but they do, the cops just roll through because I mean it's this whole like, they're everywhere, like they're just strewn about on the grass. There's like this kind of like bike path kind of shit where everybody's like going, and all the normal people that live there are on their bikes or rollerblading, and there's just like tents and like wasted people.
Yeah.
Like, and they're not even, it's not even like fentanyl really. Like mostly it's like just booze and shit. Like, I mean, I guess there's probably some fent or whatever. It's not like Philly. Like I've been to Philly too. I got good friends in Philly, and I've been through Huntington, by accident, like the GPS, like I was going to a laundromat and it like brought me right through the street. Like, dude, you couldn't see the road. It was all trash all the way across, curb to curb. And there was like hookers and there was a stop sign. And so like, I was in a line of like three or four cars and I was like, okay, and that car goes, and like, and there's hookers everywhere. All of the houses are abandoned and like just it was ruthless. And those people aren't even on fentanyl anymore. There's like no fentanyl in their drugs. It's like all tranquilizer.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
It's sick, dude.
About that too. Yeah, it's really awful. Yeah, it's something that, you know, I'm sure there's endless YouTube videos about.
I found
myself down those rabbit holes on YouTube where you watch one video and then it takes
so
you.
Sad.
One guy that's really great at those types of things is Peter Santinello. He doesn't necessarily focus on, you know, impoverished communities or homelessness. He just kind of goes wherever and gives a good spread of even balance. Sometimes he'll go to like a really remote area, a super poor area, a super wealthy area.
Ohio is really bad. Like that's where I live now. And my God.
I mean, honestly, I was just hearing something recently. I think it might have honestly been the Peter or the not Peter Santinello. It might have been Steven Snyder and Robert Guffey talking about someone else's ideas, but basically the concept that, you know, you don't have to travel the world to become, you know, a well-rounded individual. I think that's kind of an important thing. You know, I wouldn't recommend people become homeless, but
yeah,
you know, it was a like choice made the most of it. But it sounds like you made the most of it. It sounds like you saw
I had
a lot
fun.
Of cool shit.
I did. I met everybody and I saw all the stuff. Like when we were going into LA, like we were coming from like the hills of like whatever and twisting through the mountains.
The Hollywood like, Drive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of looking at that because, you know, whatever. And, so like we took some Blessed Sacrament or whatever. And like, we're like, we really want to see this. Like, let's really get the effect of what is this, you know? And so we got the full dose on and like driving the van into the freaking heart belly of LA was like really something else, you know? And I got to, I would visit all my anarchist friends and, you know, and, it was really good. I kept focused on good things. I didn't want, and like, I wasn't always flying a sign. I would get a job in Tennessee, in Nashville in the winter. And then I would get a job in Massachusetts in the summer. And like, I just wouldn't have a house because rent is a trap. Dude, why pay so much money for such a, you know, falling apart house and what the hell, like, you know, it's a trap. And so I was like, I refuse to pay rent anymore. I just wanted to see what it would be like. And I did listen to Freeman a lot, you know, and he would talk about, you know, being free, you know, and so it was kind of inspiring. I had like a good, it wasn't like, oh shit, I lost my job. I guess I got to be homeless. It was like, actually it happened that I was growing cannabis in a rental. Like I was like in a room with some friend's dad and like all of a sudden the dude's ex-wife was like gonna be there and stay there. And I couldn't have my plants in the house because she just didn't agree. And I'm, so like all of a sudden I had to like get rid of everything. And like all of a sudden I didn't have a house to live in anymore. And so I was in my truck and I was like, this ain't so bad. I was like, what am I doing? Like spending money? Like, why do I need to find a new place? And it was winter and I was just like, oh, I'm just going to go back to Nashville. And, you know, and I got a job with friends and, you know, eventually I sold my motorcycle and got a camper and, you know, lived in like an old kind of junky camper that, you know, it was nice though. It had like all the stuff you need. So I wasn't really ruthless homeless. I wasn't like, but I also wasn't strung out on fucking trank dope. You know?
Yeah, it sounds to me like you were homeless by choice out of a sense of adventure and a sense of like anarchy, not out of like necessity or some sort of tragic circumstance, which unfortunately I mean, that's the majority of homeless people. And it's interesting to hear your accounts of this, because like my experience with homelessness, obviously I've never been homeless. I've definitely taken the liberty of living with family probably much longer than I should have. And yeah, I've been renting since, but my experience with homelessness is more just like the people I see generally in certain parts of Connecticut. You know, we're Massachusetts and Connecticut are not all that different. You know,
no, I know.
Pretty similar. But like New Haven and Hartford, I'm not so familiar with, but New Haven, Tennessee, I do see a lot of the same people. The homeless people are not, I get the sense they're not like traveling the same way. Maybe the communities that you met through Walmart, like that's more of like the traveling homeless, which there's an entire population of people doing that, which again, not necessarily related to the black market or crime in any way. They're just by choice going and living outside of, let's say, what is considered normal.
Right. And I learned from a fellow that at the Rainbow Gathering that those people are called hum bums, like home bums, kind of hum bums. And the other ones are like some other, there's a whole bunch of names, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. And
like the hobos are the ones that ride the trains and like, what, blah, blah, blah.
Well, so, but that's a whole culture that developed out of, the trains and basically the early roots of America, where people would just walk from, you know, coast to coast if they had to. I mean,
it's frontiers. I mean, there was like the, you know, the Depression and stuff, and they had to get like where they're going. But I think there's a difference in the psychology of these people. And even he was telling me about like how depressing they are, the hum bums. Like, if you're moving and always changing and doing, then the gears of the universe are moving too. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to find opportunities and you're going to have synchronicities and things will open and it will become like, oh, it was meant to be like that. Oh, I'm so glad, you know. But if you're like staying in one place, doing the same one thing and like stuck in the same mentality, then you're just going to be grinding against the wheel and you're not going to find anything good. And you're just going to like end up like, you know, in a wet hole behind Walmart, you know. It's like, it's really, there's a lot to be said about synchronicities. And like, Freeman would talk about it. You don't, like, you need to give the world, you need to give the universe the opportunity to give you new experience and new, you know, and if you're stuck as a humbum, maybe try going somewhere else, you know, or getting a shitty job, you know, and like doing it that way, you know, like there's a lot. It's really sad to see the people that are carrying a sign. They spend so many hours doing that and they call it like making money. I got to go to work, you know, when they talk, and it's like so many hours of that and they're just not doing anything. It's really messed up in my opinion. Like I would get enough money for a sandwich and then I would fold it up and go, you know, I would stop and ask nicely at a gas station, may I have a little bit of gas, to like 10 or 15 people. And I would get a tank and I would keep going. And it's like I would, my mind is like I would read a book instead of sit out there on the road, you know what I mean? Like there's, you gotta, you know, it's a different kind of person. It depends on what you do with it, you know. But there is a psychology to the humbums that it's very sad. And I think that they are on a path of self-harm, as well as me listening to Deicide way back when. It's like it's a reaction to their whatever, and they can't get over whatever. And not everybody, obviously, but a lot of times that, you know, stuff happens because people can't, like, a lot of people are like, you know, large children, you know, and they don't ever really grow up and they don't ever really know how to solve their problems. And
yeah, well, and at what point are we enabling this by helping people in those situations? You know, that's the part of me that feels a little cruel at times when I have, again, recognized someone's face and seen them for years as homeless. And I'm like, you know, why would I give you money? It doesn't seem like you're really taking any effort. Yeah. But again, you know, there are resources that, you know, aren't exactly unavailable to these people. A lot of times they're refusing to change their circumstance, and you can only help someone so much, right? So again, it's a tough situation, but I'm very curious, you know, just from everything you've already shared, like, yeah, it's fascinating to me, as somebody who at times has felt like I might end up that way, but you know, this
have no fear.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is like, this podcast is an example of me figuring it out, and I've continued to figure it out and make, you know, money and keep myself afloat. So,
yeah, that's very hard to do in this day and age.
You got to have people around you. It's not easy, you know.
That's true.
It's definitely important. And that's part of the idea with this show. It's like, my family thinks I'm crazy, you know, they still love me, but why do they think I'm
crazy? God bless them.
You know, part of it is, yeah, quitting my previous job as a delivery guy and going full bore into this. And, you know, I probably could continue to do the podcast and be a delivery guy again, but
it's tough to juggle everything.
Well, I feel like there's a certain level of commitment that I've put to this where I'm like, I can't turn back. I need to be full-on entrepreneur. So
good for you.
If people want to support that, then I love them and I will continue to love them.
I love them
when they listen to the podcast. So I love them. I love you for joining Sean. And yeah, man, it's really interesting just to talk to you about you and your life. And I feel like that's maybe more important than what we were talking about earlier. It's fascinating as it is. Like, I like just having these conversations where we connect one-on-one and you tell me about your actual life, you know, because it makes a lot more sense now. Like, some of the things that you talk about, I can understand you better as a person and the full picture of who you are and what you bring to this as a researcher and as a podcaster and as somebody who, you know, spends their time committed to the principles you've stated and the truth that we're all striving to, you know, I hope that we're all striving to maintain a certain semblance of commitment to, right? The truth, honesty, and so forth. So,
right.
Again, thank you for waking the dead here with me today and helping push forward this mantle of truth as much as we can grasp it as mere mortals. But it's Wake the Dead across the board, right? On X,
yeah.
Wake the Dead, and on all the podcast platforms, same place you can listen to this show. So before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to leave people with and any
words? I guess, like, you know, I was drowning in a sea of confusion and ignorance, you know. And then I recognized principles of truth, which gave me a firm foundation to stand on. So now the seas are no longer rocky, or, you know, like, there's no more torment and like tumult, that everything makes sense now. And I hope that everyone can find that for themselves, to find the true principles. Really think about it. You know, why are we built this way? Why do we, you know, why is it that I feel like I do when those things happen, you know, whatever it may be? Like, really, I think that everyone is on a path of growth and change. And if they find certain principles, then their growth will be in a positive direction, you know, instead of being stuck in a cul-de-sac of illusion, going round and round. I hope for everyone to dispel their illusions and to find their true self and, you know, the real principles that matter to them. You know, for me, it was self-ownership and to love another like myself. I find that as like, those are the true principles, right? And everything else, you know, like I own myself, you own yourself, and you have your thoughts and your everything, like your soul is speaking through you as mine is through me, and we can share this place together, you know. I hope everyone can relate to each other on that level. And if so, then the morality will heal everything. Like once they, once people stop sitting on the fence on morality and they start, you know, being real with what really matters, then all of the other stuff in life finds a way to make sense and clear out of your way so that your true will can do what you're meant to do, I guess. So I'm here doing what I'm meant to do. For some reason, I never thought I would be talking on a radio program, like, you know, my voice, like I'm a photographer. Now I'm like 45 years old and my eyes are going bad. Like I'm farsighted now. And like, I can't even look at my camera. So this is my art now, I guess. Like, you know, so I'm always doing, and I'm probably never going to stop. And my show is free. But please donate. I have a donate button on my page at onegreatworknetwork.com/Sean-McCann. And if anybody chooses to do so, it would very much help because I do have a regular job. And I am actually, I've got like 5 shows that I've got to post still. And I'm kind of behind on my work for the podcast. And it's kind of sometimes like I'll put out like 10 in a day, you know, and like just to get them all done. So it's not like a regular thing. It's tough having a job and a kid and like trying to juggle it all. So,
and but listen, when I say I do this podcast full time, I'm not saying I'm not doing other work to supplement.
Don't think about my statement and relate it to yourself. No, I'm not judging you. I'm glad. I think everybody should be able to get paid for what they truly want and what they truly care about. I think everybody, there's enough money for everybody. I think everybody should be doing it. It's my fault for still having a job.
I understand what you're saying. I just felt like I kind of was seconding what you were saying about being behind on episodes from time to time. Cause as much as I say I do this full time, there's definitely other work that makes me money quicker that I'll do, you know, side jobs, so to speak. So,
it has to, you got to pay your bill. You got, if you have a house or rent, like it's a trap, dude, you got to.
And that's why we hope people can free their mind and elevate above that. But Wake the Dead is the place to hear more from Sean. Thank you, brother, for joining me. And
it's a pleasure all the time, every time.
Of course. Here's a good place to start and to wrap up. And I definitely hope people check out some of the stuff we mentioned today, the Terry Gilliam films, The Prisoner with Patrick
Zero Theorem, you should see, because you don't recognize it. You will laugh and you will see that you'll love it.
All right, I'll check it out. I have it in my notes as something you mentioned. So right on. Well, thank you, Sean, for joining me again, and the audience for tuning in. And until next episode, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now.